please listen carefully.
Hello, and welcome to the Optimist Daily's Weekly Roundup. I'm Carissa.
And I'm Ariel, and we're working hard to put solutions in view and optimism in the movement.
We're back again with another episode of the Roundup. Ariel, how are you doing today?
Okay, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit under the weather again, but, you know, the weather is actually pretty nice, so it's okay to be under it, I suppose. A couple weeks back, I was sick with a cold, and then I guess I just didn't give myself enough downtime.
Yeah.
I just kind of felt better again and was like, go, go, go. I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate. And then suddenly my body was like, no, girl, you got to slow down. You're going to be sick again. And so here I am. How about you, Carissa?
Well, I must have picked up your cold virtually because I've been battling a little bit of a cold myself too. So we're both congested hosts today. So we have some congestion going on in this episode. Yeah. But it's been pretty manageable. I've also had like some spring allergies on top of that that I've been dealing with the past couple weeks. Yeah, despite all that, it's been a good week. And spring is springing. It was actually the first official day of spring this week.
Oh.
So that's something optimistic.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
I guess besides that, dealing with a little bit of cold allergies, this week I've also been dealing with my period as well. And I say this because it kind of goes into my solution. But also, Ariel, before we even hopped on, I was like, should I say this on the podcast? I'm like, yeah, it like needs to be normalized to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally natural thing. I think our listeners are probably mature enough to handle a little bit of crampy talk.
Exactly.
Or period talk. But yeah, we definitely have to normalize it because it seems a bit weird for like half the population to have to hide something that they go through or that they had gone through in the past on a regular basis.
Right.
And you know, it does present some problems. That means
totally.
That there are also solutions to go hand in hand with that.
Exactly. So my solution today, I lead into the period aspect because primarily I started birth control when I was a teenager because of my period to kind of regulate it because I would have such bad cramps and experiences with that when I was younger.
Oh, yeah. I had exactly the same thing. I don't know. Maybe it's not exactly the same thing, but I had a dysmenorrhea,
oh.
which was a really, really bad cramping,
oh.
and it only happened if my period came late. So I was also prescribed birth control, and yeah, that's also why I started my birth control journey. So I didn't know that about us having that in common.
My period was always pretty regular. I never had issues with it being late or anything, but yeah, my cramps were just so bad. I remember being in high school and there was one day in like one of my science classes that I had to call my grandma to come pick me up because I was literally about to pass out.
Aww.
My cramps were so bad. So access to contraception is very important for more than just the contraception.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll kind of dig into it a little bit more. So O-pill, the over-the-counter birth control, is transforming access to contraception in the U.S. O-pill is the first over-the-counter birth control pill in the United States, and it is poised to change the landscape of contraceptive access. I know we wrote before mm-hmm. about how the law got passed in the United States that this would be an available thing, but now it's finally going to hit the shelves.
Yay.
So this pill is a progestin-only contraceptive pill and boasts an impressive 98% efficacy rate in preventing pregnancy, as substantiated by data submitted to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. And conveniently, it can be procured through online platforms and will soon hit the shelves of major retailers, including CVS, Walgreens, Target, and Walmart, offering widespread accessibility to consumers across the nation. Individuals will now be able to receive birth control without a prescription via O-pill, similar to how common drugs such as Tylenol or aspirin may be obtained. Dr. Jonas Swartz, an OBGYN at Duke Health, emphasized the importance of this breakthrough, saying, "This is a big win for reproductive healthcare access."
Mm-hmm.
I guess before I go any further, Ariel, I just kind of like wanted your perspective. How is it obtaining birth control where you are in Amsterdam? Is it relatively easy or?
Yeah, well, funny you ask. I actually just refilled my birth control today.
Oh,
and
very convenient.
Yeah, it is a pretty easy process once you have a doctor. When I first came here, I was just a tourist. And so I went to the international tourist doctor in Central Station. And I had to get a prescription. And of course, it wasn't covered because I didn't have any health insurance here. I could have gotten it covered from my health insurance in Canada, but I don't – now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think I ever claimed that. You know, it's fairly affordable. You just have to get the prescription. So there is still that barrier for getting a prescription. And once I became a resident here, it's actually – mandatory for you to have health care or health insurance. My coverage includes birth control. So I guess it's just kind of like standard. I don't think that there's any over-the-counter access here. I haven't actually looked into it, but I will maybe look into it after this.
The healthcare system in the United States is very hard to get appointments with your providers. Something that happened like kind of recently as I've been in college and like in between like insurances and such is like getting new doctors to prescribe this birth control, and the doctors have a 6-month wait, and I can't like have the prescription refilled until I see a doctor. And so yeah, that's just kind of like the bigger issue of healthcare in the United States especially, and getting access to that.
I just want to say one other thing on top of like healthcare access, going back to the story of when I was first prescribed birth control, I was in university at the time and I still lived with my parents. I hope if they listen to this, they're not going to feel too exposed, but they didn't at that time want me to be on birth control, even though I was prescribed for a medical reason.
Yeah.
And it just went against the beliefs that they had at the time. And so I still lived 2 more years with dysmenorrhea because my parents wouldn't let me get the pill. But if you don't need the prescription and you can just get it over the counter, then you know, I'm not advocating for going against, you know, your parents' will or anything, but your body has to be your choice. And this kind of takes down not only the formal barriers, but also the informal barriers of perhaps family beliefs, cultural differences. So yeah, this is a very interesting solution that I think covers more of the bases. But yeah, anyway.
It's definitely very, I guess, like thought-provoking to think about all the reasons why you would need access to contraception pills. So it's a lot bigger than preventing pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Dr. Swartz, kind of who I was talking about earlier in this solution, was saying that, you know, this is a huge achievement, and says, as we're saying, Ariel, it eliminates these unnecessary barriers to obtaining a prescription. And he says too, as physicians, we don't need to be the gatekeepers to contraception. And I think O-pill removes that gate in a really meaningful way. And it's definitely a pivotal milestone in the face of rising abortion restrictions. Dana Singisser, who is the co-founder of the Contraception Access Initiative, agrees with Swartz and describes this as just a great pivotal milestone. And, you know, as abortion bans are being passed across the country, she says, it is even more important for people to be empowered to not get pregnant if that's what they want.
Yeah.
As we've been saying, you know, making sure we have access to contraceptions and even further more education in communities where needed is very key to preventing unwanted pregnancies. And O-pill is really positioned to fill these major gaps in contraception access, and particularly among underserved groups. So Dr. Swartz emphasizes the potential impact of over-the-counter contraception in rural areas with provider shortages, where traditional treatment may be limited. He goes on to say, it's a real shame to lose access to contraception completely in that gap. Contraception is accessible outside typical healthcare settings to community pharmacies, where O-pill is predicted to be widely distributed. Molly Scott, a regional assistant dean at the UNC Elsman School of Pharmacy, emphasize the need for pharmacists to deliver complete contraceptive counseling and customized care. I can see a woman coming into the pharmacy and the pharmacist could have the conversation with her about O-pill and other options, Scott said.
Nice. Yeah, it's really good to be able to reach out to the communities that are underserved. But generally speaking, underserved communities are also not the most affluent communities. Is there like a price tag on this pill? And yeah, how accessible is it really?
Singisser emphasized the importance of resolving these kind of affordability concerns, particularly among, you know, these vulnerable communities. I think right now the price is $20 for a 1-month supply. And as she says, that could be out of reach for some folks, particularly where it's most needed. Mm-hmm. Singisser supports federal laws that require insurance coverage for these over-the-counter contraceptions, which aligns with public opinion and legislative actions aiming at increasing fair access to birth control. But, you know, she also underlines the significance of tackling all the affordability obstacles for OPIL in general to have the greatest impact of boosting contraceptive availability nationwide. Surprisingly, a KFF's 2022 Women's Health Survey said there was a significant variation in the affordability barrier for over-the-counter oral contraception. Only 16% of respondents indicated a willingness to pay more than $20 a month, which is pretty slim. So, and 39% were okay with a monthly expenditure of $1 to $10. And alarmingly, 11% said they were unable or unwilling to pay for over-the-counter contraception in general. In response to these concerns, Perrigo, the maker of OPIL, has announced plans for a cost assistance program that will help qualified low-income and uninsured persons obtain OPIL at a reduced or no-cost price.
Nice.
I think, you know, this is a great solution. As we addressed, there is the problem of affordability, even though it's like accessible with anything, the price tag can play a major difference as well. But it looks like there are already responses from the manufacturer and hopefully legislative bills as well that will make it even more accessible. But the fact that this is even a thing happening, that you can just go to the local pharmacy and get birth control over the counter, is so revolutionary. And something that, especially in the United States, is needed these days. And it's just making me super optimistic for controlling our bodies.
Yeah, no, this is an amazing solution. And it might seem to just tackle one problem, but really this problem is so multifaceted. And it can affect different women or different womb-bearing people in different ways. So, you know, it's really encouraging to see that not only is it available over the counter, but that they are also starting to tackle the issue of price and, yeah, just general access for everyone. But switching over from women's reproductive health problems / solutions to men.
Yeah.
I might just take over from here because my solution has to do with masculinity, especially in response to toxic masculinity, which, before people get upset about it, you know, toxic masculinity is not just like hating on men and what's masculine. It's really about uplifting men and taking away just the toxic parts of popular culture or stereotypes that are not just harmful to women or other people around men, but to the men themselves. The title of my solution is Redefining Masculinity: Influencers Lead the Charge Against Toxic Narratives. We're going to delve into the intriguing world of social media, which, you know, social media has its pros and its cons, but we're here to highlight the positive male role models that are reshaping the landscape of masculinity as a whole and detoxifying the so-called manosphere. So when we hear words like toxic masculinity, social media, one of the influencers that's bound to come up is Andrew Tate.
Right.
Yeah, he's been pretty much synonymous with what's often labeled as toxic masculinity. But there is another side of the story. There are actually influencers out there spreading healthier messages to men and boys. According to Jago Sherman, head of strategy at Goat Agency, there's a diverse group of male influencers addressing topics ranging from mental health to parenting, fitness, and all of that stuff. But they often fly under the radar.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's why it's important for us to, you know, uplift these other types of positive masculine role models for people. Because as Sherman notes, it's influencers like Tate who, you know, who are so sensational and who offer quick fix solutions to complex issues that overshadow more nuanced and thoughtful content just because it's like so in your face and so snappy.
Definitely.
In response to this, last week, the Labour Party in the UK proposed a plan to counter the negative narratives of masculinity promoted by influencers such as Tate, which I like. That's a really proactive stance because it's not just about what's happening on social media itself, but Labour's plan also involves training mentors in schools to provide positive role models and then also to teach critical analysis skills to students so that they're empowered to navigate social media with, you know, a more discerning eye.
Yeah, that's super important.
But since we're on the topic, there are some influencers that we do want to talk about today, and they're making waves with more positive messages. So there's this guy, this fitness guru called Joe Wicks, and he's known as the Body Coach. Oh. And he has just a really approachable demeanor and practical advice that have garnered millions of followers. And his approach proves that positivity can be popular. It doesn't just have to be like catchy, toxic masculinity.
I mean, we can vouch that positivity should be popular. So
yeah, exactly. That's what we're all about here at the Optimist Daily.
Yeah.
And then there's Russ Cook, and he is known as the hardest geezer on Instagram. And I've been actually following this guy.
Oh, wow.
He's been on this epic journey to run the length of Africa for charity.
Wow.
And you should definitely check him out because his videos, he's just always so full of energy no matter what hectic situation he's in. And you can imagine, like, this guy's, he's got red hair, he's pale, he's running through Africa. So he definitely gets quite a lot of attention already, but it's also dangerous. Like, he's just been in so many different situations, and I was pleasantly surprised to see his name come up because he really does have a positive influence. Like, just seeing his videos makes me smile. And he's also, you know, he's raised nearly 200,000 pounds. So that's like 254,000-ish US dollars for charity. And, you know, just reading some of the comments on his videos, I'm just going to read one now because
totally.
This one guy commented, "I followed you from the start. You inspired me to start running every day. I made this account to track my progress, and now I'm running more than 2K every day, adding 1 meter per follower, and I've lost more than 10 kilograms. And in the process, I'm also on my way to beating my depression." So
wow.
There's men out there who are really getting inspired by people like Russ Cook and by Joe Wicks to really take charge of their mental health, their bodies, you know, their mindset. I'm not a guy, I'm not a man, but I really, this solution really resonated with me. However, Saul Parker, he's the founder of The Good Side, cautions against overlooking the impact of toxic influencers on boys and young men themselves. I think in our culture, there's definitely more of a push for young women to seek positive role models, but boys are often left to just figure it out on their own, and they don't have enough adequate support. So Parker emphasizes the need to address broader issues of traditional masculine norms perpetuated by this quote-unquote manosphere. And he highlights influencers like David Goggins, who promote self-discipline and motivation without engaging in misogyny or harmful rhetoric. We're on a good path here. It's less loud and splashy as some of the toxic content out there, but
yeah.
I think this is quietly and slowly and steadily going to make a difference. And it requires a lot of effort, but, you know, there's hope in the power of positive role models to inspire change and, you know, empower boys. And yeah, I guess that kind of wraps up my solution. I guess we can just continue to navigate the ever-evolving landscape of social media together with kindness and empathy and self-improvement, all of that good stuff.
For sure. And that kind of just goes back to, I know I already said this, but the model of the Optimist Daily itself, we know the toxic landscape of social media and the news in general is, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot more splashy and flashy for bad news or like negativity to be so prominent. But it's important that we uplift these voices that are improving all aspects of every area. And, you know, there is a lot more kindness and goodness out there in the world, and we have reasons to be optimistic. And so I'm really glad you shared this one.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we had a really great roundup of solutions as usual, Carissa.
Most definitely.
But we hope you haven't had enough, because we do have a lot more solutions from this week that you can find on our website, optimistdaily.com. And they include
your viewing guide to witnessing April's total solar eclipse in North America. And then we have another guide, a guide to the 2024 solar eclipse, but this is kind of a debrief on the science of it. I think April 8th, I believe, is the solar eclipse. So you will be well prepared from our solutions this week to hopefully capture if you're in North America. Cultivating Success, Five Essential Characteristics of Outstanding Gardeners, Ending the Stereotypes and Empowering Lives on World Down Syndrome Day, which was yesterday. So that one was a really cool one too.
Nice. We also have Europe Raises the Bar. MEPs approve the world's first comprehensive AI legislation. Then we have How to Stop Texting, Distracting Your Kids While They're at School. The Surprising Human-Like Intelligence of the Humble Bee. And National Park Service bans commercial air tours over Bandelier National Monument.
Yeah, lots of great solutions this week. But if you want to start your day off right next week with our new solutions, make sure to subscribe to our free daily newsletter to get our stories straight to your inbox.
We also have a lot more on our social channels. You can find us at The Optimist Daily on almost all of our platforms. That includes Threads and Pinterest and everything. The only difference is on X. There we are Ode to Optimism.
Yeah, and we're a small team of optimists working hard to bring you positive news. If you want to support our mission of putting optimism into the world, click on the link in the show notes to find out how.
And remember that support doesn't always have to be financial. You could just recommend our podcast to a friend, leave a positive review on Apple or Spotify, or forward a link to a loved one, share a solution on your socials. Anything like that would be a huge help to support us. Well, this was fun, Carissa. A really good start to my weekend as usual.
Yeah. I hope everybody has a great weekend and feels a little bit uplifted from these stories. Ariel, I don't know about you, but I have to go let out my congestion. a little sneeze and cough.
Hopefully next week we're back on track and feeling healthy.
Yeah, exactly. So well wishes to our listeners if you're going through any cold allergies as well. But yeah, I guess we'll see you next week then.
All right. Ciao.
Bye.